even just the first stage of how it works, about the idea, what does it mean to say that it's a koach hataina, as opposed to saying that it's simply about credibility, but to say that it has some kind of other kind of a power, that it works as a, what's called by the Achronim koach hataina, meaning that somehow you are given the power of the alternative taina that you're not invoking. So we discussed yesterday some theories of how that works, and a couple of possibilities, and how maybe the two ideas may be connected, maybe not be connected. So we went through a lot of that. So today, just to take it to the next stage, so one major issue that the Achronim talk about is the question of how should we categorize the power of Migo? What should we compare it to in order to try to assess all the questions that are going to come next? And when we're making a calculation, Migo up against something else, which again is so much the theme of the beginning of the second parak here, a whole slew of things being thrown at each other. The husband's got this on his side, and the wife's got this on her side, and they're all being thrown back and forth. So what does Migo accomplish? What does it not accomplish? Where does it work? Where does it not work? So we'll see some of the details of that. But one of the major questions is, what could you compare it to? Would you compare it to a rove? Would you compare it? Is it a type of chazaka? Right? And chazaka, again, just to clarify, both rove and chazaka are words that are used in different ways, and sometimes they blur into each other. Because a rove could mean, you know, a statistical rove. Basically, it's just, this is the way things happen, which we call a ruba delesa kaman. A rove could mean we actually have something in front of us and more of them are one way and some of them are another way. It's what we call the ruba de issa kaman. Chazaka could mean, like we've been using it, a chezkas mamon, when you are holding on to something. But it could also be a type of rove. It could be basically a premise, a default assumption of how life works. The terminology gets a little bit blurry sometimes. So sometimes rove and chazaka are clearly distinguished things. Sometimes the chazaka word is used to mean something which is essentially a rove. So if you find it confusing, it's just worth knowing you're in good company, because it is confusing because some of the language is used in different ways. But so chazaka especially is confusing because the word chazaka is used in many different ways. But the powerful chazaka that we keep talking about, the mochzak, that's a chezkes mamon, the person is holding on to the property, while a chazaka, in another sense, the word might mean a default assumption or a belief about the world in general, which is also a type of rove. So sometimes chazaka means mochzak, which is better than rove, and sometimes the word chazaka is used to mean something like a rove. So how would you understand migo? So there are those who say migo is itself a rove. Now, what does that mean to call it a rove? So one very specific way of saying it was expressed by the Chachma Shlomo. The Chachma Shlomo is a commentary to the Shulchan Aruch. It's written by Rav Shlomo Kluger. See, he always has very interesting ways of thinking. So he says it's a rove because most people know how to make the best case for themselves. Most people know all the various options that are out there, and therefore we could assume that whatever they say reflects their knowledge of everything open to them. And therefore, the power of rove is the battery behind Migo. And therefore, Migo operates as a rove. And it's limited by what a rove can do and what a rove can't do. That's one perspective that a number of Achronim take. Others say that Migo is an umdana. What does that mean? It means essentially that it's a premise of human behavior, that we know that we can take it for granted that somebody who is making a claim when he has a better claim that he could be making is believed. That probably works more off of an emunah idea, that essentially a guy who's in this position is telling the truth. If he could be saying something better and he's not, we can tell about him that he's telling the truth. That's another perspective that you find. The Stipler, in a few places, the Stipler suggests that really all it does is that if we have two people up against each other and there are various factors to try to figure out who's right and who isn't, so maybe we might think, okay, at any given point, Reuven and Shimon, one of them is lying. So if Reuven has a Migo, it means that it's less likely that he's lying, or that he probably isn't lying. And therefore, to whatever effect that will have on the equation, that shifts things in his favor. may not accomplish everything it needs to accomplish. It basically addresses that one element that we don't think he's lying, and the 50-50 is not a 50-50 anymore between two parties who could equally be wrong. The Chassan Sofer, not to be confused with the Chassam Sofer, the Chassan Sofer would be a nun at the end. So you might call him the Ramban of Chassam Sofer descendants. So the Chassan Sofer writes that Nigo would only work if we could actually assume that people are aware of all the other tainas that are available to them.
Is he a son-in-law?
Is he a son-in-law? He's one of the descendants, I think. Oh, Chassan. Actually, no, he might be. Actually, I'm not 100% sure exactly where he fits in the family, so it's actually not impossible. But he's not a son-in-law of the Chassam Sofer, but he might be a son-in-law down the line, actually. It's actually somewhat possible. In any event, but however he fits in, so he maintains that Migo only works if we can assume the person knows about all the other tainas, which essentially, again, means that it's probably more about Neamonis than about Koach HaTaina. Right, it sounds like from the Rambam we read yesterday that you don't necessarily have to know all the other tainas, and that Beis Din will tell you about the tainas that you may not know. So that question, do you have to know about the tainas or not, that seems to go to the question, are we talking about Neamonis? Therefore, it's only believable because you realize you had other options that you didn't take. You didn't know about them, so then it doesn't really score you any points. While if it's about you're having access to all of the claims that are there, so then maybe it shouldn't depend on your knowing it. So this all goes to the question of what category do we put Nigo in? Once we assume Nigo exists, so what kind of strength does it have? What kind of, looking at that picture, it makes me think of this, what kind of strength does Nigo have? How powerful is it? What kind of forces can it overcome? What can defeat Nigo with all kinds of super weapons? So you get this issue has to be clarified. Is it like a rove? Is it like an umdana? And the like. It's interesting to note also that there are those who maintain, among them the Nesivis and the Nachal Yitzchok, again, Reb Yitzchok Hanan, our sponsor, who maintain that Migo only works for the Baal Din himself. That if you are a litigant, and you are the Migo, then you are believed. But if you are not the litigant, let's say you're an aide, for example, and so you don't necessarily have Neamonis of Migo. This is very much a sugya in our parak. We haven't got there yet, but some major themes that we'll get to. If you see, for example, this is one of the marmakomas I haven't given you yet in order not to overwhelm you. We can take a look now together. See the Mishnah on Daf Yeches and Beis. It's the Mishnah there says, Ha'edim sha'amru k'sav yadeinu huzeh, aval anusim hayinu, kitanim hayinu, psili eidus hayinu, hare'elu ne'amonim. V'imesh eidim shu k'sav yadam, o sh'haya k'sav yadam yaitz makum acher, einam ne'amonim. Right, so what's going on in that Mishnah? You have eidim who come and who want to basically disqualify a shtar. Right, this is a major topic that we'll get to, we'll just borrow from it in advance now, that eidim come and they want to say, this shtar has our name on it, and it's no good. Because we, the Eidim, we were related to each other, we were puzzled for some reason, whatever, and all the things the Mishnah just read. So, in that case, they are the source of the validity of the signatures, because you need to have some kind of indication these signatures are real, they're real people. So if the Eidim themselves come and reassert their recognition of their own names, they're the source of authority, and then this is all true, but if somebody else is the one who's coming and establishing the day, this is good, then the Edom are not Neman to come and say that we were bad Edom. So what force is at work here in this Mishnah? What does it sound like? Where is the Nemanus of these Edom coming from? Thoughts? What does it sound like? What category does it sound like? Kashasa, right? That basically they're the ones who provide all the Neamonis in the first place. Right? They're the ones coming and saying, we are the authority on the shtar, and we're telling you that we're not a good authority. So we're both. So the Ritva over here, and I'll give it to you to look at it later, but just so you can be aware of it now, the Ritva says that, yeah, this works because it's Peshasa. But Migo, right, apparently there are two different things in this formulation, Migo wouldn't work. Migo has to be Baldin himself. That's a whole question in general, whether Migo has any role in Eidus. There's also a Ritva in Kiddushin, talks about this. Essentially, is Migo a principle that makes anybody Neman, or maybe it's something that's only relevant to the actual litigant? Right.
We mentioned yesterday that Migo stemmed from Pesha Asar.
Right.
So, but not that far, apparently. That Pesha Asar works over here, but Migo would not work.
Right, well, the Ritva doesn't seem to agree with that assumption. Right, so basically we have three possibilities. Right? Either that Migo and Pesha Asar are two completely different systems. Right, it's worth reviewing for a second. It's so fundamental here that we could say that they're two completely different systems, that Migo is about either credibility or having extra tainas, but Pesha Asar is about you controlling the authority and therefore you control the details. Right, we could say they're two completely different ideas. Or we could say Pesha Asar comes from Migo, like we talked about last week, that it's a, basically a form of Migo, Migo de'ibo ishasik. If I didn't want to, I didn't have to say anything. So it's just part of the list of Migos. Or what we mentioned yesterday is a possibility in the other direction, that maybe Migo comes from Pesha Asar in the authority creation theory. That just like you are the one who created the whole authority by opening your mouth, so too, Migo is the same thing, because since you could have escaped and you chose not to escape, you own the situation, so to speak, and you're the authority. So basically, three ways to see it. It's worth reviewing. Three ways to see the relationship between Pesha Asar and Migo. Either they're different, or they're the same, but if they're the same, one can be a subset of the other in either direction. So here, we find a possible distinction between the two. It says, yeah, Pesha Asar, that's what's going on here, that works. But Migo is not a principle for Eidim, it's only for litigants, not for anybody else. So why should that be? If Migo is only for Eidin, why should that be true? Well, that's not, it's only for Bali Din, why should that be true? Any thoughts? Why would it be this principle only works for the Bali Din? So the Nesivis seems to understand that essentially it's only a principle that works to support a Chazakah. And as we started to note yesterday, that it could be that it's basically a defensive principle, that Migo only works in order to help you hold on to what you have already. So therefore, that's all it does. It goes to the Baal Din, who happens to also be the Mutzah, and let him, and this is not just any Baal Din, but only the Baal Din who is on the defensive side, who is the Mutzah, and helps him hold on to his property. But it doesn't play any other role, and therefore an aide who's not a Mutzah doesn't have any relationship with Migo. That's one possibility. Ritzvo Chanan of Nachal Yitzchak, he says it differently, very interesting way. He says that the idea is that the Baal Din, because he's got skin in the game, so we assume that he's going to take more care to be accurate. And therefore, the accuracy, the credibility that comes from Migo is only associated with the Baal Din, because it's not something we would necessarily transfer to somebody who's not directly involved. Which is an interesting idea. It's not an automatic power, it ties into how much credibility you actually have, and your credibility is connected to the amount of connection you actually have to the story. Hi.
Wouldn't we normally say that a Baal Din would be more biased to a lie, meaning it would be less accurate?
Correct, but since once we're already giving him some credibility, because we say that he's the possible Eidus in general. I mean, that's an interesting point in itself, that the Baal Din can't be an Eid, but here we're specifically saying that maybe Migo is not a principle of Eidus, it's a principle of your own credibility, which certainly is relevant to something that's about you. Right? That part, that much we see already. And we know that you are nechshad in lying because you're protecting your stuff, but because of the Migo makes you believe. It counteracts your chashad. So it only really comes into the conversation because it's about you and how we assess your reliability about yourself. So here the chiddush is that the Nachal Yitzchak is saying that's the whole point. Not only is it only about you, not only is it especially about you, but it's really only about you because it only addresses the personal investment that you have in the situation and the credibility comes from that. Okay. Yes, sir.
From the perspective of Hanhaga, mm-hmm. It shouldn't matter who it comes from, right? Because the basin is trying to deal, trying to figure out who is, how we should deal with this claim. So it doesn't matter if it comes from him or someone else for him.
Good. because it may not be a tool for, because when the ego isn't necessarily speaking on somebody else's behalf, you know, he's speaking on, he might, the ego from another party might be saying about something only relevant to him, like the aide here, like he's talking about his own qualification for a testimony. So this is not a taina that's an inherent schus of the party. So it's not like he's advocating on somebody's behalf. He's saying a migo that's relevant to him, but it doesn't affect the actual parties involved.
If we assume that the Baal Din would be more accurate, so wouldn't that also sort of take away an idea of migo that you wouldn't have made the better claim because it wasn't accurate?
Well, they really go in the same direction, right? If migo is itself about accuracy and believability, or believability, the believability part of the Nemanis. So accuracy and believability will go together, hand in hand, to support him. So because he's the party who's interested, so he'll take things seriously. And because Migo puts him at a disadvantage if he were lying, so therefore it counts towards his credit too. So they go together. Okay, so there's also an interesting point that there is also a Machlokas HaPoskim, whether Migo has to be in the presence of the other Baal Din. Do we say that Migo only works when the two parties are opposite each other? In other words, that's part of the official court proceeding. They have to be in each other's presence. Or does it work even if they're not in front of the other party? So this was a Machlokas HaPoskim, which also seems to go to credibility. And credibility has to do with your being able to be cross-examined by the other party, being able to be challenged by the other party. And the Chassam Sofer, his Chidushim, has an interesting chiluk. The Chassam Sofer says that amigo, when it's used lahachzik, when it's used just for you to hold on to what you have, to support that, then that works even not in front of the other party. But if you want to use it lahotzi, then that would have to be adopted in the presence of the other party. Right, which gets us all to that question that we've been circling around. Is Migo only a defensive tool, or does it have any other role?
Hi. But the Gemara said that the guy whispered to his brother, so that was lahotzi.
Yeah, that Gemara, we actually have to figure out exactly how that works. There's a machlokas in the Gemara. We haven't explained yet, you know, what the context of it is. So it's a machlokas in the Gemara, how that works. And that Gemara always bothered me by itself, you know, just even before getting into the details of Migo. I remember discussing this with Beris, who's Bezdin, more than one Bezdin. And the question seems to be also to do that, you know, to whisper to a dying in the middle of, again, I haven't explained the context of the Gemara, but we'll get back to that Gemara. This issue we've got to figure out about how that Gemara works. In general, a lot that's a little bit suspicious about that. So I apologize for discussing Gemara. We haven't explained yet what it's talking about. We'll come back to that. All right. So essentially, we've been circling around this question of, is Migo limited to only the machzik, only somebody who's supporting his own, defending his own property? Or could it be used in other contexts as well? Right, so many of the explanations we've seen so far today and yesterday are all premised on the assumption that it's purely a defensive tool. But, as you may have seen so far, depending on how far you've gotten, not all the Rishonim agree with this. Right? Many Rishonim do, but not all of them do. So one of the issues that I asked you to look at today's Maamar Chumash, especially if you figured out the typo of the day, wasn't clearly spelled out, is one of the main places where the Rishonim talk about Migo is the first mission in Bav Metzia. Now, what's going on there? The first mission in Bav Metzia, we have a few cases. One case says, let's say Morty and I both fight over a talis. Shnayim ochsim b'talis. We both find a garment, and we both claim that I'm the one, he's the one who picked it up first. So, Mishnah says, yachloku. Have to take a shvua, and you split it, and we each get half. Then the Mishnah says, what happens if the claim is a little different? Let's say the claim is, Morty claims that he owns the whole talis. And I say, I know that I don't own the whole talis, but I claim I own half of it. So the fight is not on 100% of the talis, it's only on 50% of the talis. Because the first 50% I concede to him. So then, says the Mishnah, okay, so 50% is for sure his. The other 50% is disputed, so we split the disputed part. He gets 75, I get 25%. Okay, so far so good? That's the mission. So what does Tosfos and many other Rishonim ask? Wait a minute, why should I only get 25%? I should get 50%. Why should I get 50%? Because of a Migo. What's my Migo? I could have said the whole thing is mine, right? The first thing in the Mishnah is that if we both say it's, if we both claim the whole thing, we get 50-50. So here, I only want 50% to begin with. Right, that's my whole interest. So I could get to 50%. If I'll just claim if I claim that I own 100%, then we'll split it and I'll get 50%. So instead of having to lose out by only asking for 50% and getting 25%, or playing like a negotiating tool, right? Ask for the higher numbers so you get in the middle. So why don't I just claim I own the whole thing so that I'm going to get the other half? Now, we're not saying I should claim that. That's a sheker claim, and that's an interesting discussion as well, whether we could even countenance making a sheker claim. But, okay, so I won't make the sheker claim. But the fact that I could have, so why doesn't that make me win? Give me the whole thing. Right, you hear the question? Everyone understand the question? Right, my goal here is to get 50% of the talus, and according to the Mishnah, I end up with only 25%. Why don't I just get 50% anyway? Because I could have said, a sheker, I could have said I own the whole thing. So this is a very interesting question, because all the Rishonim, both in the beginning of Bava Metzia and also in Bava Basra, that's what he was referring to, all talk about this question, and many of them have many different answers. So if you want to find one sukkah, which in the Rishonim level really goes through a lot of Migo basics, it's a good one to know about. So the first thing you'll see is Tosfos. And Tosfos on the page over there. So says Tosfos. What's Tosfos' answer? Or at least Tosfos' first answer?
Close.
Sorry?
Close someone else.
Yeah. Right. What's Tosfos' first answer? That Migo Lahotzi Lo Amrina. Now there's a whole background there that basically we're assuming, this is a point that I don't want to spend too much time on, but the assumption seems to be that both parties are considered muhsak, that when the two people are fighting over it equally, so therefore each one has a muhsak claim on the talus. So the fight over the two people holding the talus are basically, each one is against the muhsak of the other one. So this would be considered migo against the muhsak. That if you are going to try to use the migo tool to get this extra 25% of the talus, that would be pulling it away from the other guy. That would be pulling it away from the Muchzor. And Migo Lahotzi Lo Amrinan. So this is an expression that the Rishonim have, which is the basic premise we've been circling around the past 2 days, that Migo is not about taking away something from somebody else. Migo does not have an effective role in doing that. And that Migo is only Lahachzik. Migo is to support your position that you can hold on to what you have, but you can't use it to take something away from somebody else. Migo lahotzi lo amrinan.
Technically, you also have a chazaka on that.
Right.
So if you don't use Migo, you're also taking away from it.
You mean you're giving it over to him, you mean?
Yeah.
You mean
you're
taking it away?
You're doing the lahotzi either way.
So that's a good question in general. In terms of, you say, it happens to be, I'm a little bit skipping over it because it would get us too deep into the Metzia, so I gave it just to give you the basics. There is a range of ways to see things. You could say that we're both muhsak together in this talis. You could say that we're each muhsak in half. So I'm going to still, if I try to break into his half, I'm trying to take away from his muhsakos. Or you could say that it's something a little bit different than muhsak. It's a little bit confusing how exactly to pin it down. So just to keep it as simple as possible, that basically we're clashing over something that I don't have. I don't have his half. And I'm trying to take it away from him. So that's called apparently migo lahotzi. Now, why other Rishonim don't agree with this? Now, why other Rishonim give other answers? If you read the sugya, there are 4 or 5 answers to this question. So why do other Rishonim not give this easy answer, migo lahotzi lo amrinan? So there are 2 basic reasons why they don't. One reason is like you're alluding to, that maybe they don't see this as such a simple layout as far as who has the chazaka. Your point is one of the two reasons why other answers are given. But the other reason, what's the other reason another Rishonim might give another answer? They don't agree that Migul Lahotzi Lomrina. It's Machlokas Rishonim. And there are some big Rishonim who disagree. The Ramban, Baba Basra, the Rashba, the Tshuva. Right? There are some big Rishonim who disagree and say, Migul Lahotzi Amrina. And the Ramah, in Simon Pei Beis in the Chosh Mishpat, the Ramah quotes 2 days. Says essentially it's a Machlokas Rishonim. And there are two opinions about whether or not Migul Lahotzi Amrina. The Shach, therefore, paskins that it is a Sveika Ladina, and it's a Machlokas, whether or not it's true, so we don't really resolve the question. It's the Safek Lahalacha, whether we say Migul Lahotzi. And then the Nesivis comes in and says, but Pesha Asar, we do say Lahotzi. So just one more distinction for that list between the distinctions of Pesha Asar and Migo. So says the Nesivis, Pesha Asar, that would work for Lahotzi, although he quotes others who disagree, but he thinks the distinction is true. And maybe Migo wouldn't. So let's talk for a second about this idea. So Migo Lahotzi Lo Amrina. So this gives us a couple of possibilities. We have some Rishonim who say, Migo Lahotzi Amrina. So we have to figure out why that is. We have some Rishonim who say, Migo Lahotzi Lo Amrina. And we have to figure out why that would be. So, what can we compare Migo to in order to begin the discussion? Right, so we mentioned at the beginning of today's year that one candidate for the power of Migo is Rov. Right, so what's the story with a Rov? Rov versus a Muchsa. What's the story? Who wins? Now, who wins in Rov versus a Muchsa? Muchsa wins. Right? And that's a principle that the Gemara has in a few places, perhaps most well-known is in the Maseches Bava Kamma, that Ein Holchin B'Mamon Acher HaRov, which is basically a reformulation of the Muchzak wins in general, and a Rov is not powerful enough to win over a Muchzak. So if we say that Migo was a form of Rov, that's one way to understand it. Right? That Rove's not going to win against the Mufsa. So Migo shouldn't win against the Mufsa either. Migo equals Rove. Rove doesn't work Lahotzi Mamon. Migo shouldn't work Lahotzi Mamon. Now, let's think about that for a second. Why should that be true? And why is it that Rove is not effective Lahotzi Mamon? But this is something that the Rishonim talk about in a few places. And just to give one basic approach to it, why should it be true that if you come with a rov and you argue against me and I have a muchsa, why is it so pashut that I win against you? I can beat off the rov.
There's no rov operating on any assumption that we don't know anything.
Okay, say a little bit better, say a little bit more. So what do you mean? I mean, rove is only effective if we have no other,
right,
total 50-50.
Right. That's
okay, why should that be true? Maybe you might be right.
Well, you'd also just phrase it that the rove doesn't account for when someone already has property.
Okay, you might very well be right. I just want to explain it a little bit further. Right. What Morty is saying is that maybe rove is only effective in kind of a 50-50 kind of situation. That if we don't have a tilt towards one way or the other, so then rove should win. But if we have some kind of tilt, then maybe Rov isn't relevant. So there's truth to that. It's got to be a little bit more than that, because Rov will win against a lot of things. Rov's pretty powerful. And in fact, you know, in Rov, there are a lot of major halachas that we rely on Rov for. Kashrus, we rely on Rov. We rely on Rov even for certain chiyuvei misa. Right? That the Gemara says that if somebody hits his father, so he's chayiv misa. And the question is, how can that ever be true? How can we, does a Gemara Chulin and Afid Aleph, but how can we know that the person is actually the father? Right? Because we don't have scientific proof, then there's no DNA then. But how do we know that the father is actually the father in order to make somebody Chayav Nisa? So it's a Rov Bi'ilus Acher HaBaal. It's most likely, it's usually the mother's husband who is the father of a person. So that's a rove. So we're willing to take that rove and execute somebody. Rove is a very powerful tool. Rove is pretty high powered. So it's probably, you're right, that there's limits to when we apply it, but it's probably not just that it only works for 50-50 cases and that anything could fight it off, but a mochzak is strong. A mochzak really is able to fight it off, and that also requires a little bit of explanation why that's true. Kiva?
It could be that rove only works in cases where there's no falsifiable claim. There's no way to falsify either side.
Okay. Give me an example to flesh that out a little bit.
You know, two... I'm trying to think of exactly an example, but... you know, two people both say... in the case of the you know, rove people or their father's son.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a claim that you could necessarily, at least with the evidence available to the Gemara, could necessarily prove either way, so therefore, rove applies.
I see what you're saying. That actually is a principle in halacha, that efshel levurei, is that referring to that? The case where it's possible. This is also true, let's say, in terms of kashrus and the like, that the situations when we rely on rove, that even though you're allowed to rely on rove in areas like kosher food and things like that, but the assumption is that it's not possible for you to find out the other way. That if it's possible for you to ascertain what the truth actually is, then we don't rely on rove.
I was just relying on language from philosophy classes.
Okay, but so that is relevant, that's true, that sometimes rove is not going to be totally effective. But I think also, to illustrate a little bit what I think Morty is getting at also, is that, remember we discussed yesterday, but all these different principles that we're talking about, rove, bari, migo, whatever it is, so there are at least two categories you could use. You could say that something is a biur, something really clarifies that this is true, that we believe this is an indication that this is actually the physical truth of the situation. And sometimes something is a behavior, that we don't really know if it's true or not, but the halacha allows us to act based on this premise in the absence of any other information. And sometimes there are different degrees within those categories. So let me ask you a question. Does a rove mean that something is absolutely definitely true?
No.
No, how do you know it doesn't?
It's rove, that's exactly what
rove right?
Means.
Oh, because basically the definition, right? Rove means it's not 100%. If something is called rove, it means by its very definition, the word itself means that there's some part that's not a part of the rove. So therefore, it cannot be a statement that this is for sure true, because the word itself indicates that there's another possibility. So that itself is meaningful, that other possibility existing is meaningful. So there's an expression that the Rishonim use when explaining why in hochem moment after harov. So they say like this, and if you use the introduction we used a minute ago, you can figure out what the phrase means. That they say that on the one hand you have a chazaka versus a rove. Right? The one guy has the money already, the other guy is coming with a rove. So the chazaka guy wins. Why does the chazaka guy win? So the Rishonim have this phrase, and you see now you can understand it. Right? What does this mean? I had to use a magic marker. I want to say, smoch mi'uto l'chazaka. That the chazaka wins because it's not just the chazaka. He also has another power together with it. What does he have? The mi'ut. He has the minority on his side. Mi'ut. Mi'ut's not powerful. I win because I have a mi'ut. Because it's less likely that I'm right. That's why I win. Right? So what does that mean? What's the power of a mi'ut? How can you explain the sentence based on what we said a minute ago? How is miut a tool?
It can supplement
the migo. Well, it's not necessarily a migo situation. Right? Even without migo. Right? Just the two parties. One guy is muchzak. He owns something already. He has it in his possession. The other guy is coming with a rove. So the muchzak wins because he's muchzak plus miut. Miut. There's no magic to a miut. What does that mean? I have the power of the minority.
Well, if he already has
Mitt Romney is president. What does that mean?
If he already has a
muxa,
then having any other claim besides that is going to be...
Correct, right? But what kind of claim is a mute? Meat's nothing. What is a meat?
In and of itself. You mean like
How does it count for anything? It's zero. Right, and what power is a meat?
Can it always have like a negative effect in a positive way?
Maybe, okay.
It's
so
saying that like,
it's beautiful scene.
You see, it's such a minuscule aspect of this thing that, you know, that I have more validity.
Okay, I thought maybe you were going in a different direction, but we'll take it either way. But what this phrase means is that the existence of a miut means that the rove is not absolute. Right? If a miut exists, the rove is not absolute truth. Because it's not 100%. If it's 98%, I mean, we can argue about what statistically a miut is, but if it's 90%, then 10% indicates that there's a possibility of it not being that way. Right? If something is one in a million, that means that there are 350 people in America who have that. And so it's true about somebody. So if that's the case, so I have the chazaka, and your rove is not absolute truth. The miut is the reflection of the fact that your rove is not absolutely correct. It's only a tool to make a decision. And it's not a tool that's strong enough to overcome my chazaka because it doesn't represent absolute truth.
If you just said a chazaka, is that not enough? There's a rove versus chazaka.
So chazaka usually is very powerful, right? But now to illustrate even more that there are things that can win against the chazaka, but the Gemara tells us that rove not. So the question, why not? So apparently, this sentence explains it, that the miut supports the chazaka. The chazaka is not just working by itself. But it has the miut. What is a miut? A miut is not anything that wins, but a miut is a reflection that you're a rogue. That's what I thought maybe Adam was getting at by the negative, the positive, that the existence of the negative space means that your positive is not powerful. It means that your rogue is not 100%. It's something less than 100%.
So, basically some miut of the chazaka means, for instance, if I have a sentence that's rove swans are white.
Right.
And
talent. Yeah.
And if there is a black swan, if there is a black swan that exists, that means that when I see a black swan, it doesn't mean that it's not a swan.
Right. But well, essentially, it means a little bit like that. But essentially, what it means is that the existence of a black swan. Right. If you come and you say, let's say talking about black swans and white swans.
Yeah.
Right. Let's say I have a swan. That's mine. I have a swan in my possession. I have a chazaka on the swan, right? And you come, to me and you say, the swan is yours. Right? Why should the swan be yours? What's your taina? Because it's a known fact that you own 95% of the swans in this country. So you have a rove. If there's a swan that exists, there's a 95% chance it's yours. Right? So you come to me and you say, oh look, you've got the swan, the chazaka. I have a rove on my side. 95% of the swans in the world are mine. So why do I win? Because I have the chazaka, but I also have the 5%. The 5% swans that you don't own, that calls into question the whole assumption that the swan is yours, because of the possibility that it's not yours. If it was 100%, 100% by definition, like Arya was saying, is not a rove. 100% is absolute. So if it was 100%, if it was a fact that you owned 100% of all swans, it was impossible for me to own a swan, because by definition, the definition of a swan is that you own it. Right? So then, okay, maybe you would win. Like we said yesterday, that if the Dayanim are up against a Muchzak, but they know he's stolen it, because it's impossible for me to own a swan for whatever reason, and 100% of the swans by definition are yours, then okay, you would win. But if it's only 90%, so then that 10% means it's theoretically possible that it's mine. So since I have it, and I have the miut, meaning I have the negative space of your rove, that those two things together make me win. So I think Alex and then Sammy?
Well, now that I'm thinking about the question, it might not be so a great question, but could the claim of a rove be considered an ego because he could have claimed that he owned all swans?
Only if he would win with that claim. You know, if he has to, in this case, no, because there's nothing that would make him be supported in that position. If there was somehow a fact, if it was an umdana, if somehow we knew that all the swans were his, you know, he invented the concept of swan and he's never sold it to anyone. He biologically created them in his lab and he's never sold them to anyone. And therefore we know that a swan doesn't exist except that they came out of his lab. So then, you know, it would be 100% his. But if it's just that he happens to have bought 95%, so he doesn't have credibility to that claim otherwise, because he could say it, but he wouldn't win with that claim. So he has to have some support for that. Okay, Sammy?
Yeah, as far as Adam is going to always support the Chazaka, so why do we limit it to only these cases, to monetary cases?
The question, why don't we say it by other situations?
Yeah,
like,
right,
so that's it. So there's a whole discussion about this, takes a little bit far afield. If you want to go to the sugya of Ein Holchama Menachar HaRov, which is a great sugya, but it's a little bit tangential for us, there's a whole discussion of Kuntras HaSvekis, it was written by the Ktsos's brother, the Shev Shmaisa, that was written by the Ktsos. There is a whole literature about what's the difference between this and, let's say, the Trefa case. The Gemara says that when you eat an animal, so you don't have to worry, you shechted an animal, maybe you should worry that he was a treifa and you didn't know about it. So, no, we assume you're allowed to eat the animal and consider him kosher, because rov animals are not treifas, so we don't assume that it is a treifa. But let's say executing the guy who hit his father, so there we do rely on the rov. In other cases, we say, Ein holchem pikuach nefesh achar rov, so that's a whole discussion. It's real chayim about it, if you want to give you some mar makomos to look at, but it's a little bit of a side sugya.
You have to say that like one of those are weaker than the chazaka.
Right, you have to say that the chazaka might be different. It's a discussion in the Kunchlus Fakus by Pikuach Nefesh. You say you have a chazaka on your life. When do you say you have a chazaka on your life? You know, that's a whole interesting discussion. Like I said, some of this has important implications for our Yom HaDin, Hashkafic discussions as well. But for now, what's relevant to us is that it seems like Rov cannot be Motzi Mamon. And this part about why it is relevant to us also, if that's why. There are other theories why also, this is just what's most relevant to us for now. But if rov cannot be motzi mamon, so if migo is a rov, that could explain the position, migo lahotzi lo amrina. Right? So rov can't be motzi, migo is rov. This is basically what the Chachma Shlomo says, for example, that migo is a rov, and therefore, just like rov, you can't be motzi mamon, so you can't be motzi mamon with a migo either. So that's one way to say that essentially Migo is equal in power to a rov, and therefore it has the same limitations. Hi.
Unless we say that Migo is a birur, because it's not like rov, which is by definition an aga, but rather Migo is a birur, and therefore it shouldn't be comparable. We say it's 100% truth.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore
right, so then you might come to a different conclusion. So you're saying, why would you disagree? What's the Rishonim who say, Migo, Lahotzi, and Rina?
Right.
So that's one way to say it, right? So now let's deal with that question, right? So if you say that Migo, Lahotzi, Lo, and Rina, you might say, because it's equal to Rove, and Rove has this limitation. Now, you could say it exactly like the Chochm Shlomo and says that it's based on an actual Rove, and that's why. Or you might come to it from a different direction, and you might say, not that it actually is a Rove, just it's equal to Rove, and therefore it has the same limitations. Rove doesn't do this, therefore it's not going to work. I was saying before about Mitt Maroney being president, so Karl Rove was trying to make the case, so if he had the meat on his side also, Rove and the meat, it should work. All right, in any case, that's a historical reference. But in any case, so when it comes to Migo, it could be that Migo is a Rove, literally, like the Chachma Shlomo was saying, or it could be that it's equal, and then we have to figure out exactly how to apply that. So then the question is, so why would you say that Migo Lahotzi Amrina, the position of the Ramban and the Rashba and others, why would you say not like this? So you could say, well, I don't agree with the whole comparison between Migo and Rove. Why not? So maybe like Aryeh is saying, maybe Rove is the protocol of practice, that we don't know it's true, but it's the only way we can act when all other things equal. And maybe I believe that Migo is absolute. Maybe Migo is really enough, nothing's 100% absolute, but Migo is enough of a solid principle that it really is solid proof that the guy is telling the truth. And therefore, maybe even Lahotzi. Akiva?
According to the Shita that Migo is a type of rove, if you have a rove and a Migo,
mm-hmm.
For instance, if a woman comes in and says that I was not a virgin when I got married,
mm-hmm.
and Rove Rav Nashim, yeah, like Rav Nashim Besuvos.
She, the woman herself, claimed she wasn't.
She, you know, I was not a virgin, but I was from the saints.
Okay, so she has basically the
amigo. I don't know if that necessarily correlates at all because.
Well, it may or may not be amigo, as we saw last week. But let's assume for a second it is amigo. Let's assume that maybe it's not focused on the mark, if it's amigo or not. Let's say it is, okay.
Is it two different rove? According to the one who says that amigo is a rove, mm-hmm. would it be two different roves competing? Or would it be there are rove situations?
So in this case, what's the other rove? The other rove is that?
Is amigo that she can claim. Or in some case...
But what's the other one? So
that Rove Nashim Besuvos.
Except that she's not...
Okay.
She's,
yeah, that's... I now see that.
Right.
So
like
in a case... I was trying to think of something, but in a
but
case...
You're right, that there are cases where you can add up the factors, and then if you take a mathematical view, so and that's what essentially really, if it's anywhere, it's our sitting here, that's what some of the Rishonim was saying, and the Rishonim were coming to different conclusions, right? Because our Gemara is not very explicit about why it is that the premise, the default premise is on his side, right? So our Gemara starts off saying that she needs Aiden. If she doesn't have Aiden, then it sounds like he wins. So why does he win? So the Rishonim aren't sure, and they basically are suggesting different mixes of how these factors add up. So it's true that we have to try to assess each one qualitatively and put it in the mix and say, okay, well, on the one hand, there's this, on the other hand, there's a robe. It could be two robes. It could be you do find such a discussion, which makes it all particularly interesting. So, what do we see so far? So, it could be that yes, and maybe like Arya's point is that they're different. That a robe is only a practical protocol, and maybe amigo is an absolute beer. Maybe you see it that way, right? And especially like we said a second ago or a few minutes ago from the Chassam Sofer, like it depends on what. There's different circumstances. Sometimes amigo is effective only lahachzik, and sometimes it's effective lahotzi. Maybe it depends on how the amigo is being used, and maybe amigo is not always one thing. Maybe sometimes amigo is just a protocol, and sometimes it's actually a biru. Maybe it depends on how the amigo is being used and what kind of amigo it is. Or maybe pesha asar is a biru, and amigo is less powerful, right? So the nesivus that we said a minute ago, that pesha asar could work lahotzi, but migo not. And maybe it's all just a question of degree. So you could say that that's what's going on. Right? Or you could say slightly differently. You could say that what does migo mean? Maybe migo is essentially koach hatana. And what that means is that you have the taina 100% of whatever it is that you could have said. So if that claim, that alternative claim you could have said, if that is effective to be motzi mamon, if that's the case, if it's a claim that would have worked, lahotzi. So migo means you are 100% identified with that claim. Whatever it does, now is in effect for you. So if that's what Migo does, not that Migo has its own namanus, that we call it a rove, or we call it this many points or that many points. Maybe it all depends on whatever the claim is. Migo equals the claim that you could have made. Migo means that you get the power of that alternative claim. So whatever that alternative claim does, counts for you. Now the interesting thing is, so we just use one possibility to explain Migo Lahotzi Lo Amrina, and another possibility to explain Migo Lahotzi Amrina. Both of these possibilities, somewhat surprisingly, you could maybe see in the Tshuva of the Rashba. So did you see the Tshuva Shin and Gimel? I think that was on the later list. And it's a very important Tshuva of the Rashba. The Rashba, if you didn't get a chance to take a look, you should take a look later. That the Rashba, what's his position, have we seen so far? Migo Lahotzi Amrina. Now he thinks, he's noted to think that Migo Lahotzi does work. But he discusses the possibility that Migo Lahotzi Lo Amrina. Why should this be? And he has an interesting way of discussing it. He basically says, why shouldn't we make a distinction like this? We should have to agree with anyway. But why even theoretically should anyone make a distinction? And he says, that since Migo is to Oraisa, and we've mentioned that most of the Rishonim seem to take that for granted, since Migo is to Oraisa, so Malila Fuke Malili Yule. What does it mean? What difference does it make whether I'm taking money out, whether I'm leaving it with the original Bailin? Who cares what direction I'm going in? Since Migo is Daraisa, who cares what direction it goes in? So that question is a very interesting question, and some of the later Afronim saw one particularly interesting article that discusses it at length. What's the premise of that question? Who cares if it's Daraisa? Daraisa means it should be Motzimin and Luchzach? Rove is Daraisa. Is there some automatic rule that any principle that's Daraisa always wins? Now we know Rove doesn't take out from the Luchzach, and Rove is Daraisa. So what's the Rashba saying? So the way some later Svarim explain is that his premise is that essentially Migo gives you the power of the alternate claim. So whatever the alternate claim is, then you get that 100%. So if that alternate claim would have been Lahotzi, then you get that. So by emphasizing Daraisa, he's saying that it is the entire character of that other claim. That if it was just a tool, Midrabanan, then Chazal said, let's give an edge to this guy who has a Migo, okay, so I could accept that there are certain limitations. That can't overcome a Chazaka, let's say. But by saying it's Daraisa, he's saying not just that it's from the Torah and that's powerful, but he's saying it means that essentially you have, especially if you say that you don't have another source for Migo, which is not necessarily the rational position, but if you say that there's no Pasuk of Migo, there's just a Svara, and we discussed yesterday a little bit how compelling a Svara has to be. So essentially, maybe what we're saying is that Migo means that your other claim is in effect for you. And therefore, whatever it does, it should do. Lahotzi, not Lahotzi. That seems to be the premise of his question. So that half of the equation we can see in the Rashba. The question, the premise that should support Migo Lahotzi Amrina. But from his answer, we could also see a little bit about Migo Lahotzi Lo Amrinan as well. This truv is very valuable because it could explain both sides. So should I just finish that, or should I take the question first?
It's just on this past tense. Mm-hmm. If it was Derabanan, why wouldn't that work to take on other claims?
Because maybe you could say, all right, it's a limited power that Chazal have, and a Muchzak is or for sure Deraisa, so how are you going to be able to be Motsum in a Muchzak with this Derabanan tool? Maybe it's just there to split, to tilt things when it's 50-50. So maybe we could understand how that would matter, but the question on the other side is, how does Daraisa make it work? You know, Rove is Daraisa, it doesn't work. So that half of the Rashba could explain the position of Migo Lahotzi Amrina. But at the same time, the rest of his Lashon, if you look at it there, could also explain Migo Lahotzi Lo Amrina. So you could say that, yes, that's what Migo does, is it gives you the alternate claim in its full power. But it only does that as a benefit for the defender. Because since the defender always has the default benefit, so this is a part of his default benefit. Part of his default benefit is that he gets all of the claims that are potentially at his disposal. Just to show also how this plays out in practical halacha nowadays, also this principle comes up, that we have a principle in Mamonis called Kimli. What does Kimli mean? That, let's say we're having a fight about a monetary issue. So me and Sammy are fighting about some monetary issue. And the halacha, after all, machlokas, we've shown him the whole story, the poskim, the halacha is on my side. In this case, Sammy is the mochzak, I want to take his cool computer. And I have a claim, and it's a bunch of shitas and rishonim and poskim, but lemaisa, if you add up all the votes, I win. The halacha is on my side. However, this is a very complicated area of halacha, but the concept is there, that if there's a minority view in Sammy's favor, whatever it is, there's a Rashba and a Ramban that says that he's right, and all the other Rishonim say that I'm right. So normally, Alpi Halacha, I should win. The normal development of halacha has favored my position, so I should win. But if there is a minority of shitas on his view, on Sammy's position, so then he could win. Why? Because he has the right, as the muchzak, to say, Kimli like that view. I paskin myself like the Rashba. You paskin like all the other Rishonim, but I, as the muchzak, I paskin like the Rashba, I get to keep it. So that's an example, again, of where you have this default benefit to the muchzak. And maybe this is very similar to that. Like just like the muchzak has the right to fall back on the minority view to hold on to his property. And that's a part of the inherent advantage given to the muchzak. So too, Migo would like that too. He can fall back on a minority position in poskim, and he can fall back on an alternative tanya that he's not using. This is all a part of his default benefit tool bag. So if that's what the Rashba is saying, and again, it explains both views, Amrina and Lo Amrina, that essentially Amrina, because you get the full power of the Taina, so you could believe that it could work even Lahotzi, but it shouldn't work Lahotzi because this full power is only given to a Moksa. And based on that, so I saw one article that makes this point and explains that look at the difference between the expressions. Okay? Okay, Miga Lahotzi Lo Amrina. Right? And Mikol Hotzi Lo Amrina, Ein Holchem Lo Menachem Harov. Right, so both of these sentences mean that a Chazaka wins. Chazaka wins against Migo, and Chazaka wins against Rov. Right, but they're phrased differently. So maybe you could say that the phrasing is significant. Ein Holchem Lo Menachem Harov means we have a Rov, but it doesn't win against the Muchzak. Ein Holchem, we don't follow the Rov that exists against the Muchzak. When it comes to Migo, Migo Lahotzi Lo Amrinan, it doesn't exist. The tool's not there. The tool only is there for somebody who's defending himself. Somebody who's coming Lahotzi never heard of Migo. We don't use a Migo as a tool for somebody who's coming Lahotzi. Now again, it's a diuk in Rishonim, so you don't know how far you can really go with it, but it's an interesting point. Maybe that's the difference. Right? It's not about Rove. It's not being compared to Rove. In the case of Rove, you have a Rove versus a Chazaka, but the Chazaka wins is stronger than the Rove. In the case of Migo, you have Migo versus Chazaka, and the Chazaka wins because there's no concept of a Migo if you're not the Muchzak. Migo is a tool that's only for Muchzak. All right, so we'll leave the other answers for next week. I'll review in a minute what we said so far, but this was some complicated stuff, but it's very sodistic. Does everything make sense so far before I quickly review any questions about anything? Does it more or less make sense? All right, so let's quickly review what we spoke about today. So we discussed the fact that there are various categories that are used in order to explain how Migo works. Maybe it's like a rove. Maybe it's literally a rove, like the Chacham Shlomo says, because it's based on the idea that most people know what tainus they could use. Maybe it's an umdana. Maybe, like the Sniper said, it just upsets the balance between two people who could equally be lying. Maybe it only works if we really could believe everyone knows all the tainas, like the Chassan Sofer said. We saw a question of whether it works for the non-Balbin. Does it work for Eidim, for example? That was Machlokis, while the Ritva and Ksuba says that Pesha Asar works for Eidim, but Migo does not. And we saw also a question of whether it works not in front of the other litigant. And the Chassan Sofer says it works Lahachzik, not in front of the other litigant, but not Lahotzi. So then we started to discuss this whole question. So much has revolved around assuming that it only works lahachzik, it only works defensively, but not lahotzi. So is this true? So we mentioned, first of all, the question and answer of the Mishnah and Bav Metzia about the two cases about people fighting over a talis, and the question the Rishonim will have, that why should the guy who only claims half walk away with 25%? He could have claimed he gets the whole thing, and then before he would have walked away with the 50% he actually wants, why don't we give him that because of Amigo? So Tosfos, in one answer, Tosfos says, well, because Migo Lahotzi Lo Amrina. And we saw you could disagree with that for two reasons, either because you don't think it's a case of Lahotzi, the complicated Bav Metzia issues, or you could say you don't agree with the whole principle of Migo Lahotzi Amrina, which is indeed the view of the Ramban and the Rashba, and it's 2 days in Shulchan Aruch, and the Shach says the Sveik Ladina, and the Nesivus distinguished between Pesha Asar and Migo. So basically discussed, how does this machlokas work? Why should we say Migo lahotzi amrinon? And why should we say lo amrinon? So lo amrinon, we could say that if it works as a rove, we could understand. Rove is not going to work against the chazaka either in holchim mamon achar harov. And we explained how many Rishonim see why that works, because smoch miut l'chazaka, that the chazaka also gets the miut power. Miut is not really a power, except that it means that the rove is not absolute. It doesn't represent actual truth necessarily. And therefore, that's why the chazaka ends up winning the day. So it could be that Migo has the same issues, either because it's literally a rove or because it's categorized with a rove, and therefore the chazaka gets to win. Or you could disagree and you could say, Amrinan. Why Amrinan? Well, maybe it's better than a rove, because maybe it is an absolute beer. It doesn't have this miyut issue. It really is an absolute clarification. Or you could say that the Koach HaTaina idea, that the person who has a Migo gets the full power of whatever the other Taina is, even if that is Lahotzi. And we saw that really both possibilities reflected in the Rashba. And it's true, but the Rashba is one who maintains Migo Lahotzi Amrinan. We do say it, but he was going through the possibility of why do we say lo amrina? And when he asked him the question, he said, it's deraisa, why shouldn't it work? So he said, who cares, it's deraisa? The fact that he's bringing up that it's deraisa seems to indicate that he thinks that you get the full power of the alternative taina. And therefore, if that other taina is lahotzi, then it should work lahotzi as well. So then why, in the same tshuva, so why is it that it's not, according to the other Rishonim, going to work lahotzi? Maybe you could say, because it is a tool that's only there for the defender, the default advantage that goes to the machzik, to the defender, and therefore it's only in his case that Migo even comes into the conversation. So yes, Migo is daraisa and gets absolute power, but that power is only given in the first place to somebody who's in the position of the machzik, somebody who is himself in the defensive position, and we compare it possibly to the din of Kimli, that just like the machzik can also say, I hold like a minority view in the poskin, so too I hold like my alternative position in my range of tainus that's available to me. Notice this deal that some point out that maybe even though these two sentences are both sentences that say a chazaka wins, but they're phrased differently. In the case of a rove, a holchim mamon achar harov, which sounds like you have a rove, but it's not strong enough to beat the chazaka. We do not follow the rove that you have against the chazaka. But in the case of Migo Lahotzi, it's lo amrina. Not that we don't follow it, it's that the whole concept isn't there. The person who's trying to motzi mamon doesn't have a Migo. The tool only exists for somebody who is machzik. In other words, it has the power to do a lot of things. It's very strong. But it doesn't even exist in this case. It's not an option that's given to a motzi, and that's why we wouldn't apply it in these cases. All right, so God willing, I'll see you tomorrow at 9:30, talk about the end of the Yoma, and you should have a wonderful last day of school of the year, and I will see you tomorrow.